nag named Jimmy. I'm so fucking nervous.
Bullshit.
There's a lot of you out there. When I decided to get clean, I was visiting my mother's home group, watching her celebrate in AA, and I'd sitting there and I'd see like the 12 steps written down, and like slowly I'd start to like look over and I'm like, you know, this kind of makes sense for anybody, you know?
Tell the mic up.
Here. Not playing that card yet. A lot of my sisters in recovery told me if I bombed, they'd flash the crowd. Win-win, I guess. So I was visiting AA, watching my mother pick up years in sobriety, and I just thought that the 12 steps seemed like they made sense for anybody. And I don't know, it was like last week I realized I wasn't a one key tag wonder. It was weird, because I had picked up a few in there, but I never really took it seriously. I can go 30 days without a drink just fine, but, you know, I use all the rest of the stuff, you know, which doesn't really count. So I ended up in Al-Anon for a little bit, trying to practice the 12 steps to the best of my ability without actually like stepping foot and being a full-fledged member, but when I hit rock bottom, I knew exactly where to go, and I was very fortunate. There's a lot of things in my life that happened in my story that just seem a little bit more than coincidence, and whether you like to believe in miracles or not, I do. I watched my mother get resurrected in that program, and so when I was ready to kill myself, that was my bitter ends. I knew death was my bitter ends. That's where I was going. That's where I planned to go. It was the first time I'd ever really planned it out. It was a Thursday evening. I was by myself, living in my mother's house because I was without a home. And I called her up and I was like, Mom, I need help. And I think I tried everything. I remember coming to the rooms and thinking that book was written about me. And I remember thinking, like, every bit of it, I'd done every bit of it, substitutions, changing friends, geographic places, you know, mixing this, mixing that, taking downers to come, you know, cut back down from my ups, taking uppers to come back up from my downs, and none of it really seemed to work until I got to this place where it was just like the drugs didn't seem to do what I set out to do, and that was, you know, anything but feel the way I'm feeling. All I wanted was more. I wanted to feel happy. I wanted to celebrate. I wanted to pull myself out of whatever feelings I had. And eventually it just didn't do the trick. I ended up calling her up and she was out of town. She's like, can you wait just until I get back in town? Can you hold on just for the weekend? Not used for the weekend. I was like, sure. I lied my ass off. And I remember those last few days. I remember how empty I felt. I remember sitting in my brother's house, and I didn't know what was going to come the next day. I just remember looking at the last drink I took, the last thing I smoked, and I remember wondering what it would be like, because honestly, I knew it would work, but I really thought I was going to be sitting around with a whole bunch of old motherfuckers just talking about our problems for the rest of our life. I knew it worked. But I didn't know. And so she got back into town. It was a Tuesday. And the first meeting I ever went to for NA, where I picked up my first key tag, was a meeting called New Genesis. It was a Tuesday night. My buddy Jeff was there. He's at my first meeting. I don't really remember what was said. It is one of the few times I've seen Jeff cry, though. He's not a crier. He's kind of a hothead, but every now and then you get him, you know, you catch his soft side. He does. He's a teddy bear. He's a good guy. There was another meeting going on, but for some reason they had decided to go off and, like, have a meeting in the field without telling anybody, which is, like, that really sucks for, like, a newcomer showing up. I'm really glad I didn't go to that meeting. Apparently that guy was kind of, like, mandating everybody in his recovery houses to go to his meetings to hear his message. And I've been to his meetings, and I've heard him say the same thing over and over and over and over again. I'm like, Jesus, oh, my God, like, do you have a different message? Just, like, rehearsed. I've always really not been fond of that. I'm really glad my first meeting was there. It was one woman keeping that door open for a couple years. And there's, again, there's so many things that helped to save my life along the way. And this woman is one of them. It's Gail. She's sitting right there. She held the meetings open. If it wasn't for Al, who brought the H&I meetings to the behavioral center where my mother met her bitter ends, I might not have gotten the message, you know? And so, like, the ripple effect just kind of, like, takes a hold and, like, continues on. When I got here, I was, like, it was, like, right after the meeting on that Tuesday night, and this, like, and I was, like, okay, I guess that's it, because that's all I really knew was go to a meeting, everybody shares, you go home. No, this guy approached me after the meeting. He's like, hey, man, you want to come out to dinner with us? We're like, we're going to this place. And I was like, no, it's okay. I don't really have any money. He's like, no, it's okay. I got you, man. And I'm like, no, I'd feel bad. He's like, no, that's part of loving yourself, man. You got to, you know, accept gifts from other places, you know, when you can't do for yourself. And I was like, man, this guy's got, like, a reason for everything. And, like, I'm just trying to figure a way, like, I don't want to talk to people. Don't. And, like, I was like, maybe next time. And so, like, okay, cool. He's like, cool, that's awesome, that's all right. So we're going to this convention on Friday. What are your plans for the weekend? And, like, that was my first day. My fucking plans were to use. Those were my plans. Every day I couldn't see beyond that day. And I was just sitting there. I was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe, like, I think I might have to check my schedule, blah, 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 blah. And I remember hearing this dude in the back behind him. He's like, just get in the fucking car. And so it was just like that. And I was like, ah, I got no more excuses. So I finally caved. And I was like, okay, I'll go. They talked me into going to a meeting a night for the next few nights. So it was a Tuesday, so I went Wednesday to Hope, and Thursday, where I met Tim. Tim, where you at? Raise your hand. Make some noise. You make noise well. That one over there. There's many people responsible for igniting the fire of recovery in me, and he's one of them. I talked to him on my third night for 2 hours, and it's really easy to get lost in a conversation with Tim because he likes to talk, which was great because I was not very good at it at the time, you know. I still, like, one of my biggest fears coming here tonight was, like, am I going to run out of things to say? But he's one of those people who stood with me late at night, 2 hours in the parking lot after everybody went home, to talk about recovery. And, like, I just felt like this hope. I don't even remember what we talked about. But I just remember feeling like there was some light at the end of the tunnel, you know? Like, I didn't have to do it by myself. I went to Ocean City, Maryland the next night. There's, like, 6,000 addicts at this convention. And this one guy, one of the things I'm actually grateful for from this, my first sponsor, he actually, it was weird. I came in with, like, this, like, busted ass knee, and I was hobbling around this convention, and I don't know if it was a God thing or whatnot, but he was on crutches, and I had a bum knee, and we were just hobbling around Ocean City, and it was pretty cool. At the time, it wasn't, Because everywhere we'd go, he'd be like, hey, this is Jimmy. He's got 3 days clean. And like the whole crowd would just be, like clap. Yeah, Jimmy. Awesome. And it was such a weird convention. And so here's one of the examples like that kept me calm before coming up here. Because I remember like that convention that night on a Friday night. It was a Friday night speaker. And somebody had control issues in the back because they had the bass up. Like, nah, we need bass. We got to hear bass. And the speaker was speaking, and all you could hear him say, he sounded like a preacher, and he was, I found out later. He wasn't even in the program. He had a Friday night speaker, not in the program. All you could hear him say is, crack cocaine, crack cocaine, crack, I can use crack cocaine, crack cocaine. I was like, Jesus, man. And that same guy told me to get in the fucking car. He's like, let's go, dude. Like we'll come back later. We ended up not, I mean, I still got a message. I was still fired up. You're around 6,000 recovering addicts when you felt alone for so long. Like, it was so weird to come into a room and get a sense of identification from people for being myself. Because one of the ways my disease manifests is I put more on top of Jimmy. And I try to pre-orchestrate the events in front of me. Doesn't matter who it is, where I'm at, and my favorite example to use, because it's the easiest one for me to remember, is when I first came in, I was having these insane panic attacks. Like, I was calling people up while I was at the job site, and I was curled up on the ground in a ball. My chest felt like somebody was standing on me, and I could barely even talk to the store clerk in 7-Eleven, so it's miraculous to me that I'm even up here speaking on a microphone on a stage. As It does. I wouldn't have gotten here without a lot of help. Crack cocaine. I remember, that Friday night speaker was pretty funny, like the whole concept of it. You never know where the message is going to hit you. And for me, it was like, I didn't know if I was in or out, really, I think, until like this one moment where that guy that like invited me to the convention, Plumber Dave, he's not here today in this crowd, he's still clean. And he just kind of like, I'll never forget the way he just kind of approached me and kept like pulling me in and kept trying to get me to tag along. And we were sitting in the merchandise line at the convention. And we were just talking, spitballing ideas and things. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of burning bush moments that I've had in recovery, but this is one of them. And he's like, well, you know, man, we got to live our way into a new way of thinking. You know, we tend to believe what we live. And I was like, that just seems so contrary to anything I'd done, because I thought I just had to think happy thoughts, which I was absolutely horrible at. You know, I was like, my default setting was negative. I used to pride myself on the fact that I could like pick out something of somebody in like the first 5 minutes and be like, oh, I don't like them for this reason, X, Y, and Z. And then all those things, like I was, all that doubt in other people was like really just a reflection of the doubt in myself. And I did that as like a defense mechanism because I felt like I needed to build myself up. I surrounded myself with shitty friends, people that would steal from me. I put stuff in my body that I had no idea what it was at certain points. And it was just a whole lack of self-respect. There's no self-love there. There's no self-love in doing these things to me. I was my own worst enemy. And he used the example. This is my favorite one. I use this all the time. He's like, yeah, man, I want to go into a meeting sometimes, and I want to sit in the back, because I feel like I'm hiding myself from some sort of pain, some sort of suffering. And all I'm really doing by doing that is feeding it. I'm giving it a positive affirmation, like, oh, I need to hide in the back for a reason. Whenever I do that, it's like actions speak louder than words. It never occurred to me that my own actions speak to myself. And so I learned a new language. I talk to myself in my own actions. If anybody was sitting in the A4 meeting last year and saw me playing with a machete in the middle of the campfire, and I was fumbling around, I was dropping it, and I think somebody said, like, who gave him that fucking machete? And I was like, that was me practicing my program. I was saying no to, like, hiding myself. I was going to put myself right out in front, no matter what anybody thought about me, because it's contrary to what I want to do. My knee-jerk reaction is to want to just, like, walk away. And it's so, so odd that I used to be like that to me, because now, like, I will talk to almost anybody. And I try to carry that spirit with me anywhere. I try to come up to the newcomer whenever I can, because it's what was done for me, and it's how I keep what I have. And I wouldn't be alive today if it wasn't for it. I needed that, and I know that other people need that. And there's so many that, you know, we all try to deliver the message to. And I remember the story that my sponsor told me, and it's about sand dollars. It's about, what is it? Starfish. Here we go. Starfish. I like starfish better. That's my sponsor. That's what these guys are here for. There was one day this little girl came across an old man on the beach, and he was throwing starfish off the shore into the ocean. And she walks up to him, and she's like, "Hey, man, what are you doing that for? You know they're just going to wash back up and dry out. It doesn't even matter." He smiles, and he picks up another one, and he looks her in the eye, and he says, "It matters to this one," and he throws it out there. I could count a lot of people. I don't have enough digits to count the amount of people that I've seen pass away. And like Jeff said, I was part of the class of 2012, whatever. I know there's at least one of us sitting in the crowd. Kari, where you at? Kari? Kari is part of the class of 2012. Kari's still alive. Kari's given me so much hope. He's been one of those guys that's like, anybody that's ever given me some bullshit excuse for not being able to get to a meeting, I've been able to call him out. I'm like, well, this motherfucker rides a fucking bike everywhere he goes. He gets to a meeting. He gets clean. He stays clean. Instead of giving them the sugar-coated version, well, like, oh, I understand you don't have a ride. I guess you just can't go to a fucking meeting. I guess you're just going to die. You know? No, you can do it. You can do it. For me, it was life or death. For me, when somebody said work, steps, or die, motherfucker, I completely understood. It was like my whole first few years, it was like this battle for my life, you know? Everything I did when I heard somebody speak, when I heard them say, do this or do this, these suggestions, I've heard it likened to, we suggest, like jumping from an airplane, we suggest you pull the parachute. I got that one from Dave H. We suggest you pull the parachute. You don't have to, but it's not going to be such a great story if you don't. So I did. Almost everything anybody suggested to me. My sponsor couldn't get me the journal for the life of me. It's like I tried it for like 2 days. I was like, I don't fucking like this. Fuck this journal shit. But I had this one thing come up, and it was like a service commitment. And I wanted to get involved, and I wanted to get in the middle, and I just like heard about this convention going on, and they were just meeting, and I was like, oh, let's go see what this is about. At the time, I was taking these newcomers to a meeting, like, they live right down the street from me. It was my way of like participating. They're not clean today, but I am, so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to help someone out. And I went to this meeting, and all these guys that had been here for a while were there, and I was just under a year, and they were like, hey, we need somebody to like design a shirt. And I was like the only person in the room, and I was like, really? It felt like one of those God moments, like that's, I draw a lot. I'll draw. And they're like, cool, you take the wheel. And I went and I designed my first t-shirt for NA, and I came back, and these guys were like, yep, send it, you know. I was like, just like that. It was pretty cool to have my design on a t-shirt. And we ended up, they were like, we need somebody to sell them. I was like, yes, because NA asked me. They said, say yes to NA. I was like, yes. And so I end up at the end of this convention, like, selling t-shirts, and I'm meeting all kinds of people, and they're like, okay, we're going to have this bid meeting, and now we're going to have to, like, orchestrate this whole presentation and get a whole bunch of committees together, and we all form this, what was that? It's called ad hoc. I can't remember. I'm talking to Jeff. Yeah, no? I don't know. Anyways, we end up forming this committee, and we put together all this work, and we get the bid, and the convention ends up coming to our area. It was the ECCNA. East Coast Convention of Narcotics Anonymous. And I got to be a part of a convention that brought that got literature to jails and institutions. And that has been, it's like all the proceeds go to like basic texts, and we just like send basic texts to all these inmates. And so the message is getting into the prisons, and all these people are getting clean because like we're putting in the work, because we're making t-shirts. Because somebody asked me, and I showed up. And that kept me clean for quite a while, because that went on for like 2 years. The whole process is pretty lengthy to get the bid and then form everything and to get everything together. And so, like, I was floored. I end up in the streets of Philadelphia selling t-shirts for this convention, at World Convention. I end up at all these different conventions just meeting all these different addicts and just, like, spreading my roots. And, like, if you, like, the best way that I know of to this day to get in the middle of this thing is to get into service work. So I will never be able to pay back what was given to me in service work. That saved my life. I could ramble on about all of you for like ever. It's been like this crazy, insane, wild journey full of things I never thought would happen. When I came around, like I said, I was having these crazy panic attacks, you know. And I didn't know how to deal with it, right? And so one of the things that really helped me out were the steps. This is me. This is my story, okay? I was diagnosed with general anxiety disorder before I got in here. And so these things, this was, like, pretty big to me. I could barely, like, function throughout the day without, like fighting a panic attack all day. And I just remember, like, picking up all these tools of recovery, and one of them was, like, what I was talking about earlier, not sitting in the back of the room on denial aisle, but getting in the middle, because that's saying that Jimmy doesn't need anything on top of him. I don't need to sprinkle any dope on me. I don't need to act a certain way. I don't need to dress a certain way, because I know when I first came around here, I was trying to like go to Friday night meeting, dressed to the nines, shaving, looking good. I'd be walking around in an A shirt because I was thinner and showing my muscles off, and, you know. And then I didn't realize what I was doing. I got a story about that in a second. And the more I did that, the less I felt like I needed to do that. The less I felt like I needed other people's approval of me to be me, to live. And not only am I able to like walk into a 7-Eleven and not freak the fuck out or pre-orchestrate a whole conversation, I could just be organic me, you know, wherever I go. I don't have to act a certain way for anybody. But it comes from that long time mantra of that out loud meditation of walking through the fear. Every single one of those times that I approached the counter and said what I needed to say, that came, whatever came out of my mouth, it was walking through fear, because I was terrified at first. I was extremely terrified because I was so worried about everybody else's thoughts of me. I had treated myself like such a piece of shit for so long, I started to believe it. In the step working process, when I got to step four, I remember telling my sponsor, I was like, I'm scared. And I think he said something like, well, if you're scared, we need to go back to over step three. Which I was like, no, we don't need to do that. We don't need to do that. We've got to go backwards. I don't want to do the waltz. But I remember it felt like I was standing on the edge of this abyss, and I had no idea what was in there. I remember doing the same thing at the beginning of writing that four step that I had done everywhere else and tried to manufacture some meaning and an outcome that I thought that the steps were supposed to produce. And so I obsessively wrote on all the resentments I've ever had from that point all the way back to preschool. I'm not kidding. I had 400 people on my resentment list, and I wrote on all of them, and it took me 3 years, but I did it. It says in there, like, some of our four steps can border on the line of obsessive, and I was like, Jesus, they're talking about me again. Is how I know I'm in the right place. So I just remember thinking, like, I thought I was going to find some definitive reason to believe all those horrible thoughts about me. I thought that I was going to find out that I was this, like, oh, yep, I'm a fucking monster. But I turned over every stone, and the disease dies in the light of exposure. And I found out I'm a pretty cool guy. I don't know why now, but every resentment I had there was fear behind it. And everything, almost everything I was trying to do, there was some sort of attempt at love, to love myself or, you know, not let myself, you know, get defeated. And so there was a lot of perseverance in me. I found a whole list of assets that I thought were pretty cool about me. And so I remember it was like I was just kind of cruising on in my recovery, and I was going to all these campouts because it's one of my favorite things to do. It's one of those things I had to recolor when I got clean. And I was going to all these different campouts. It was so cool. It was so cool. I was meeting people, and I ended up at one, and I met this girl, and she has some crazy kids. And she was the speaker for Friday night. And I remember, like, I felt, like, kind of, like, distance. Didn't feel like a whole, like really a part of the group. And I felt like I didn't really belong there. And, like, I don't know, I just remember, like, some of the addicts, like, trying to, like, drag me along like we do, like, make me a part of. I remember this one girl, she was a speaker, and, like, I come out to talk to her, and, like, she couldn't even give me the fucking time of day. She shared this great message, and then it's like, you know, all the spirituality went out the window, and, like, she wouldn't even talk to me. I was like, this bitch. I was like, what the hell happened? Like, what did I do? Like, she wouldn't even talk to me. She wouldn't even look at me. I was like, what's going on? I don't even know. But I ended up, like, going away from that camp out, and I ended up at another one, and, like, I was, like, one of the first ones there, and she was there. It was just her and me. And I was like, well, let's try to have a conversation again, I guess. You know, and it was funny because, like, I struck up a conversation, and she ended up being pretty cool. She had a lot of recovery in her, and we made fast friends. And but we were, neither of us were in a place where, you know, anything was going to happen. This is my wife. So I'm telling the story of how we met. One of the gifts of recovery is my family and her. She's definitely one. Segue into this was believing in myself. Fast track to, like, later on, I found out she wasn't talking to me because I guess her friend had dibs or something, and I was like, that's fucked up, man. Like, he wouldn't even talk to me. She's like, you were in the friend zone. It's like, it doesn't sound like it. So we're married, so that's cool. And I ended up falling in love with her kids. They're wonderful boys. And I don't know if I ever really planned on having kids. But one of those definitive moments was when I was able to like look in the mirror and say, Jimmy, I love you, and mean it. Because I didn't want to poison the world. I thought I was poisoned still. I remember I felt like I had enough in me. I was like, I have at least enough tools to love myself. I was like, I would like to have kids. So recovery has given me two beautiful boys. I wouldn't have done it without NA. I wouldn't have believed in myself if you guys hadn't believed in me first. I remember when I met my current sponsor, I was 60 days clean, and I was in, just after a camp out, go figure, I had gone to this meeting, and I was picking up my 60-day key tag, and I remember I had it with my current sponsor, and he had gone with me. And I remember him sharing, like, in the Just for Today, and I broke down, and they're like, Just for Today, I'll believe in somebody who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. He's like, I believe in you, Jimmy. And I fucking shattered, like, and I just started bawling right there in the middle of the meeting. It's not for everybody, but it was just for me at that moment. And I needed that. I needed people to believe in me until I could believe in myself. I needed people to love me until I could love myself, you know. Let's see. I've had the privilege of being in many people's lives. And I've had many people tell me and credit me with helping them and extending their life and their recovery so many times. Many starfish, if you will. One of them is my friend Jamie. It's my wife's best friend. And I got my own company, right? And she's in drug court, and she's like, they won't accept the fact that I work for my boyfriend, so can you put me on your books? And I was like, yeah, girl, I got you. Let's dope fiend this shit. You know, we're clean, trying to live dirty. I'm like, I know she's clean. I'm going to help her out. And then I found, like, it was, like, this big hassle to go through all this stuff, and I was like, it really, like, brought me down to be like, girl, I can't help you out. I got to say no. It's hard to make healthy boundaries, but that was definitely one. And she told me, she's like, Jimmy, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have gone back to school. And she's going for her counseling degree. So she's going to help out a lot of addicts. If anybody knows Espresso John, another starfish. John told me, he's told me so many times, I didn't want to believe him at first. I was like, you're full of shit. I'm not the one who saved your life. I didn't help you. And he's told me so many times, I'm just going to share it because, like, you know, I'm not going to, I love me. But I love you, John. And I'm glad you're still alive. And this dude, I walked up to him just like I do so many newcomers. And He's like, dude, you saved my life at that camp out, and you just pointed me to the next one. That was Branna. And so if you've had a shot of espresso from John, you're welcome. I'm kidding. I like to see the ripple effect of recovery. I like to see it's insane. It's like I sit here for 11 years, and I watched so many of us fall off. I watched so many of us die. And I get up off my seat just because I don't want it to happen. I've had friends from my childhood come in and then go right back out and kill themselves. I've had people that I've put a great deal of effort into go out and do the same thing, and they don't come back. I've had friends that I wanted to be so part of. And there's times I had to say no because it turned into a social club. And NA is not a social club. Okay? I wouldn't be alive today if I didn't take it seriously at some points. And even though, like, you know, the fire is a great place to make myself vulnerable, to stay warm and to, you know, get around a bunch of recovering acts, and I'm having a great time and I'm getting a great message, out in the woods, there's danger. So many of us have passed away from not sitting in a chair. So many of us have passed away from not getting the message. So many of us have passed away. And every time I see it happen, I just remember, I want to live. I want to live. And I've actually almost followed people out of the rooms during meetings, trying to keep them to come back, where the message is in the meeting. And I've actually had my sponsor actually grab my shoulder as I got up to leave, and he said, "Sit down. The message is here." And I'm grateful for that. And every time I've ever thought about it from that point on, that statement has rung in my head. All this negativity that it used to just echo and bounce off the walls of my mind in the wee hours of the morning has been replaced by a voice of recovery. Just for today, we believe in you. Any cliche you can think of, because I'm just drawing a blank right now. Be the we. No big I's and little U's. Don't quit 5 minutes before. That's a good one. No matter what. There's no good reason to use. I remember this one addict I was showing up for, and you know, this was a long process, and I don't know who was there for them, but I stuck by them when they ended up going to prison for a while. I'm not going to call you out. And I remember like just calling this dude and like him calling me and putting some money in his canteen and just, you know, just the back and forth, just the heartbeat of NA, you know, just being there for one another, making ourselves vulnerable to each other. I was his sponsor at the time. And when he got out, he went in clean. And when he got out, he was still clean. And that was miraculous to me, because after being a part of that East Coast convention, where we give all those textbooks to the inmates, it meant a lot to me to be able to witness it firsthand, as somebody could stay clean in prison and come out and still be a productive member of society. There's so many things that I want to do, and I don't feel like I'm confined as I used to be. I never thought I would start my own business, but yet I'm standing here today with a business, something I never believed in myself enough to be able to talk to somebody, you know, and be able to like perform and do a job well enough to, you know, be an employer. Yet here I am. I'm grateful to be alive. I'm running out of shit to say, and I still don't want to have my friends flash you. So thanks for letting me share.